Hey guys, welcome to part 7 of the O.J. Simpson trial. I know, there's so much detail in this trial that it's taking many parts, so bear with me. Today we get into the end of the defense's case, the verdict, and the public reaction to the verdict. And then the next episode, I'm going to get into my theories about what actually happened that night and how OJ's eldest son was involved. And then we'll be all done with this and on to a different true crime. So go grab your weed, go grab your wine, and let's dive into this true crime. Hey guys, Rose420 here. Thanks for tuning in again and getting into part 7 of the OJ trial with me. Just want to give a shout out to everybody who has contacted me on social media or given me a follow or a share. You guys are awesome. You guys say awesome things. I love talking with you. I'm so happy I decided to do social media, so just wanted to bring that up. Okay, so let's get into the strain of the day. I am smoking Lemon Kush Cartridge. It is very good. I like it. I'm not doing bongs and concentrate because it's earlier in the day and I have stuff I have to do. But yeah, it's delicious. I give it a 8 out of 10 leaves. It is from a legitimate dispensary. I do not recommend cartridges from the street just because I've had terrible experiences with them where they are not good. I do have a glass of Pinot Grigio with me. I mean, it's 5 o'clock somewhere, right? So grab your bongs, your bowls, your bud, your cartridges, your dabs, your whatever, and your cocktail, and let's get in to the final part of the O.J. Simpson actual trial. And as I said, next week will be my theories of what actually, or it might be later this week, will be my theories of what might have happened that night. O.J.'s eldest son is involved in my theories. He has a son that wasn't with Nicole and who was older at the time. He was 19, but we'll get into that next time. So let's get back into the defense's case. Okay, so they go back into the famous Bronco. I've talked about this Bronco so much, and we are going to talk about a glove, probably more than you've ever wanted to hear about a glove, but it is a huge part of this case. Oh, on an aside, if you hear my dogs, I am sorry. It is rainy out today, so they won't go out. They're laying on the couch with me. Two are laying on the couch with me. The other one's on the other couch. But if you hear them, I am sorry. They're dogs. I don't know what else to say. Okay, so let's get into this. Barry Scheck said the police planted the victim's blood inside of OJ's Bronco. Now, if you remember, Ron and Nicole's blood was found mixed with OJ's in the Bronco. Ron Goldman would have had no reason to be in that Bronco outside of, you know, him being murdered and his blood being carried in there because he didn't know OJ. He didn't associate with OJ. He was friends with Nicole. So, yeah. So, the defense, the Dream Team, says that the blood was planted. So, there was a collection made on the 13th of June. And they said that the detectives who were there at the time planted the blood in the Bronco when OJ came home that night. The prosecution obviously disagreed with this. I disagree with this. I don't think, like, they didn't plant the blood in the Bronco. Anyways, The prosecution points out that the Bronco had already been impounded by the time they were talking about, and the detective they brought up wasn't even in the area at the time. Okay, so that's it for the Bronco. We can finally leave the goddamn Bronco behind us. I am so sick of talking about that white fucking Bronco. I wish he had a cooler car. And now Bronco sounds like a weird word to me. Okay. So the socks found at the scene. The Dream Team says that they were planted. Nicole's blood was planted on the socks. These, remember, if you think back to when I brought up the evidence, these socks with Nicole's blood were found in OJ's bedroom. And so the Dream Team is saying they were planted. I don't know why their argument is everything was planted. That seems a little outlandish. As I've said before, OJ was like a national treasure before all this happened. So, I mean, he wasn't a national treasure. He was clearly a douche behind the scenes, but people liked him because, you know, he was personable. He was funny in movies. He was a great football player. Okay, so like I've said, I think that backs up why I don't think the police would target him. But as I've said a million times, Black Lives Matter, and they definitely get targeted. I just don't think that was the case in this instance. So if you remember back to when I talked about the evidence collection, these socks were gathered on June 13th. And it had not only Nicole's blood, but Simpson's mixed in it. And the blood wasn't identified until August. So in the beginning of August, the 4th of August, they identified the blood on the socks to be OJ's and Nicole's mixed together. The socks were found by Detective Furman. And the defense again suggested that the lab planted the blood on the socks and that the blood wasn't there originally when they found the socks, and they just gathered the socks and used OJ's sample blood and took some of Nicole's blood from the scene and mixed it on the socks to make him look guilty. This seems really excessive, even if they were trying to plant evidence. Like, I just feel like, why would they need to plant all this evidence? You know, couldn't they just plant some obvious things if they were going to do that, such as like the murder weapon with blood on it, if they were going to go for that? You know what I mean? I just feel like, why socks? Why a blood drop on the back gate? Like, I feel like if they were trying to plant evidence to make him look guilty, they would plant evidence that would, you know, throw the key away, you know, like he would be in lockup forever. So this doesn't make sense to me, but that's fine. So they talk about how the lab received the vials from the victim earlier in the day to compare to on August 4th. So they say they didn't identify the blood until that day because he planted it on the sock, so he had to wait until he had the blood in order to plant it on the sock. So they're pointing to that it was identified so much later because the lab tech didn't have the blood to plant until August 4th. So they immediately get booked into evidence. And the lab tech drove back to Rockingham that evening to give the reference vial to Fung. Remember the guy who really fucked shit up in the lab and shouldn't be working in a lab because he pretty much contaminated everything he touched and was the worst? Yeah. Okay. So he drives it to him. So it's the vial of O.J. Simpson's blood that they're using to compare to blood found at the crime scene. And so they're saying that this gave the lab tech and Fung time to plant the blood on the sock and then say it was tested and say, you know, it's Nicole and OJ's blood. This clearly means that OJ did it because it's mixed together. So I have, you know, the dream team is just planting seeds of doubt every step of the way. Like, every single step, they're trying to not prove that OJ didn't do it, just that there's enough reasonable doubt to not convict him, I feel like. Like, they're not pointing to anything that says, oh, he definitely couldn't have done this. What they're doing is taking evidence and trying to make it look not as concrete, which, if you ask me, means they're not trying to prove his innocence. It's just a reasonable doubt thing, which is the smart way to go. And they're not known as the dream team because they're stupid. These are some of the smartest people, smartest lawyers in America, who are very persuasive and good at making their arguments. Okay, so let me get off that long-ass fucking tangent and back to Juice the Douche. So obviously, the lab tech denies planning the blood. Fung said he couldn't see the blood that was collected from on the sock that was from Simpson's bedroom. And the blood stains were only visible underneath a microscope. And the prosecution shows this is true. So the lab tech denies planting the blood on the socks. Obviously, even if he did it, I doubt he would go up there and be like, yeah, I totally planted that. I mean, yeah, I don't think he did plant it, but I feel like it goes without saying that he would deny it. So there's video that's collected, and it shows that the lab tech had stored the evidence right after it had been collected, and it was stored before he could have had a chance to plant the blood. And from news cameras, because remember, this was, you know, huge in the media at the time. Absolutely gigantic. So they have media coverage that proves that the lab tech never even went in the van where the sock was being stored when he arrived at Rockingham. So, like, he couldn't have conspired with Fung and planted the blood on the sock. Okay, let's get into the famous glove. So this glove is, like, burned in everybody's memory that remembers this trial. The little catchphrase that Johnny Cochran comes up with that we'll get into is everybody knows it. It's been made fun of many times. They made fun of it on South Park. That episode is hilarious. If you haven't seen it, it shows Johnny Cochran's way of defending, which worked, but was a little insane. Okay. So let's get into this glove. If you remember, a bloody glove was found on the Simpson property by Furman. So for the sock in the back gate, the defense had physical or eyewitness evidence to support their claim, and the prosecution could refute it, but that wasn't the case with the glove. If you remember, the glove was found on the edge of the property. It was bloody, and they found the mate to the glove in O.J. Simpson's possession, and they proved that it was the mate with the fibers and everything. So, yeah, so back into racism in this case. So the New Yorker is obviously covering this trial, and they think that, and I agree, that the defense is going to accuse Furman of planting the glove because he's a racist. So defense attorney, one of the dream team, defense attorney F. Lee Bailey. I will be calling him Bailey from now on because I like that name, and I'm not calling him F. Lee. So Effley. He suggested that Furman found the glove at the crime scene and then placed it in a plastic bag after picking it up with a stick and put it on his person so people couldn't see it, and drove to Simpson's home, and then he planted the glove to frame OJ. So let me recap that, because that's a lot. So he's saying that Furman found the glove at the crime scene, picked it up with a stick, put it in a plastic bag, and concealed it in his socks specifically. I don't know how you fit a glove in a plastic bag in your sock, but whatever. Like, no. Like, what? What? Like, I understand money, maybe, like bills, but that's bulky. And would your sock even hold that? I want to test the strength of socks after this to see how much they can hold on your person, because I feel like my socks are not loose enough for it to fit a whole freaking glove in it, like a leather hand glove. So it's bulky. All right, whatever. I'm going to stop saying bulky now and continue on. So then Furman brings the glove out and plants it at the crime scene again in order to make Simpson look guilty. And it was because he was racist and he wanted to be the huge hero in a big case. So he planted it because he was racist and hated black people and because he wanted to be a hero. So that's the defense's argument for this. Furman went on to be accused of breaking into Juice the Douche's Bronco. Fuck. I knew I spoke too soon about the Bronco. God damn this Bronco. I never want to say the word Bronco ever again after this podcast is complete. And he used the glove to plant blood on the inside. Like, he took the glove and rubbed it against the inside, kind of like a paintbrush. And that's how the blood got into the inside of the Bronco. So this glove was snuck around, used to plant blood evidence, used to frame OJ, blah, blah. This is why this glove becomes so important, because it's like what the entire defense uses. I'm going to say this. Racism is included in this. I am not going to use the actual word. I will be referring it to it as the N-word. We don't use that word on this podcast. So you know what I'm talking about, though. So obviously, Marcia Cross gets cross. She gets cross with these people and denies that Furman planted the glove. She said that several officers had already went over the scene for almost 2 hours before he even got there, and none had noticed the glove. 14 other officers were there when Detective Furman arrived, and all said there was only one glove at the scene. Lieutenant Frank Spangler, I think is his last name, testified he was with Furman for the entire time that he was in there, and he would have seen if Furman did plant the glove or use it as a paintbrush to put blood in the Bronco or whatever else they're claiming. So this lieutenant says, no, he was with me the whole time. I would have seen it if he had done it, and I didn't see it. So Furman added, Furman also didn't know if OJ had an alibi at the time. He didn't know if there was any witnesses. He didn't know whose blood would be on the glove. He didn't know that the Bronco was OJ's, and he didn't know if the area had already been searched. So all this ignorance piles up to, he couldn't have planted it because he didn't know any of this. So why would he plant the glove if he didn't know it? And if he didn't know the stupid Bronco was, you should take a hit every time I say Bronco. You'll be stoned AF by the end of this podcast. if you didn't know the Bronco was Simpson's, why plant blood in it? You know, like, if you don't know it's his, planting the blood will do nothing. And if it's not his, it will cause confusion. So if you're really trying to frame somebody, that seems like a dangerous way to do it when you have all these unknown factors, in my opinion. So he gets cross-examined and denies that he ever used the N-word to describe any black person in 10 years prior to his testimony. Unfortunately, I'm not saying Furman is a good guy and he's not racist. I'm saying I don't think he planted the gloves. So, unfortunately, audio tapes become released in which Furman uses the N-word 41 times in total 8 years before the murders happened. So, he said in 10 years he hadn't used the N-word. He clearly did a lot 8 years before. He was clearly a piece of shit. And I hate racists. I am actively anti-racist. So clearly a piece of shit. You should have never used that word. I still don't think he planted the glove there. There's just too many unknowns for him. But just because you didn't plant the glove doesn't mean you're not a piece of shit. So all in all, piece of shit. I still don't think he planted a glove. So these tapes become known as the Furman tapes. And they really become a huge part of the defense because it shows that he is racist and a piece of shit and would probably crack down on somebody for being black, and that all of his testimony lacked any credibility. So Marcia, I called her Marcia Cross earlier. That's not her name. Marcia Clark ends up calling the tapes the biggest red herring there ever was. Do I think that it was kind of a distraction? Yes. Do I think that the defense was doing their job? Yes. Do I think Furman is a piece of shit? Yes. Do I think him using the N-word was terrible? Yes. Do I think it greatly impacted this case? Yes. But I don't think he planted the glove. I think so. Back to the racial tensions at the time. I think because of those, that is why this becomes such a huge part of the defense. Obviously, him using that word is not good in any racial climate and is never okay, but it was definitely used to the advantage of the defense, and he was a piece of shit. So the tapes get handed over to the defense, and Furman says he asked the prosecution for a redirect to explain what the context of those tapes were. No, there's no context that explains why you said the N-word 41 times 8 years ago. So nobody wants to hear it. Even the prosecution and his other police officers are like, bro, we can't be seen with you now. You use the N-word on audio tape. There's no context that's going to excuse it. So they abandon him. After the tapes get played, nobody wants to be seen with him. You know, he's a pariah. You shouldn't use the N-word is the big... You shouldn't be a racist piece of shit is the big lesson of this, I guess. So Rodney King, as I said, happened a year prior to this. So this becomes huge in the public. It's what causes the divide between races for whether he was guilty or not. It was really bad. So Furman says he's not racist and apologized for his previous language and said he had been quote unquote play acting when the tapes were made. I don't know why it would ever be okay for a white person to say the N-word 41 times in a screenplay, but okay. He says he was promised $10,000 to say all those things if the screenplay was produced. So after this, many of his coworkers who were minorities came forward and said he isn't racist and expressed support for him. So Furman finally gets called back to the witness stand by not by the prosecution, because they refused to have him answer any more questions, but by the defense. He's called back on September 6, 1995. There was no jury for this, but it was televised. So the whole public was watching it. The whole public hates him because he used the N-word so much and he's a piece of shit. And, you know, he says instantly pretty much everybody hated him. So, yeah. I mean, having those tapes played, pretty damning. So, he has his lawyer standing by his side because it was possible he could be charged with perjury because he said he didn't use the N-word within 10 years of the arrest, but we all know that's not true. And his attorney says, use the Fifth Amendment. Now, if you're a fan of the Chappelle Show, I know it's popping in your head. One, two, three, four, fifth. Fifth, I plead the fifth. One of the funniest episodes. So yeah, this guy uses it correctly. And it's to avoid the perjury charge because he would self-incriminate himself. So part of the dream team, Uelman, asked Furman if his intention was to plead the fifth to every question they had. And Furman's attorney instruction to say yes. Uelman then took a sidebar with the defense to discuss the fact that he's going to plead the fifth. Should we ask him more questions? So they ask, did you plant or manufacture any evidence in this case? And Furman says, I choose to assert my Fifth Amendment privilege. Here comes Johnny Cochran. Oh, Johnny Cochran. He was amazing at what he did, but what? He was just... Okay, so here comes Johnny Cochran finally. He responds to Furman pleading the fifth, and he says it's all a cover-up, that's why he's pleading the fifth. He asked Judge Ito to suppress all of the evidence that Furman found. It's denied, but that's because pleading the fifth is not supposed to imply guilt in any way. It's your right as an American to do it, know your rights, and it does not imply guilt. And there was no evidence of fraud, so there's no suppression of any evidence. Cochran then asked that the jury be allowed to hear Furman taking the fifth again. Ito denies his request. Ito also criticized the defense's theory of how Furman allegedly planting the glove and quote-unquote said it would strain logic to believe that. That's what I said. There's just so many unknowns. He didn't know about so many things. Like, it was a stretch at best. But once the tapes got played that he said the N-word, it was the final nail in the coffin. There's just no coming back from that. The racial climate wasn't great at the time. The LAPD's reputation still isn't great, but was really bad at the time. He says the N-word 41 times on tape. It was the final nail in the coffin. So, OJ... So, these famous gloves... These famous ass gloves. So they ask OJ, the defense, Christopher Darden, asks OJ to try on the gloves that were found at the scene and at his home. So the prosecution didn't do this because they've been soaked and frozen and unfrozen a bunch of times. They have blood on them from Simpson, Brown, and Goldman. If you know anything about leather, it contracts. When it gets wet, if it's frozen, it can shrink. There's a lot of factors at play. So instead of having them try them on, they had a sales rep from Bloomingdale's who sold OJ the gloves say he purchased that same those same gloves in that size in 1990, and they had a receipt and a photo of it and a photo of him wearing the same gloves on a different day, so they didn't have him try on the gloves, which ends up being a terrible, terrible thing. So OJ puts on the gloves, well, tries to put on the gloves, and they appear too tight. Now, he's wearing latex gloves underneath these gloves, too, because they don't want him to affect the evidence. So, of course, they're appearing too tight. That's a whole nother layer. They've been frozen and unfrozen. They've been soaked. They've been through a lot. They are not the same gloves OJ purchased. They are the same gloves OJ purchased, but they probably shrunk. So Marsha, of course, says OJ's acting when he says he can't put on the glove. And Cochran replies to that, "I don't think he could act the size of his hands," quote unquote. Then they go on to say that OJ had arthritis and he was on anti-inflammatories and he was not taking the stuff for a day and it caused swelling in the joints and hands. Johnny Cochran then contacted Sean Chapman, the Los Angeles jail doctor, who confirmed that OJ was taking his medication daily. There was jail records that verified that he was taking his arthritis medicine. So his hands being swollen wasn't a thing, but like, you don't even need that. There's so much evidence pointing to the fact that the gloves wouldn't be the same size. So Human comes up with, and Johnny Cochran repeats this in his closing argument, and it is a famous quote, and everybody has it burned into their memories that remembers this trial. "If it does not fit, you must acquit." And it was catchy, and it really stuck with the jurors because the main gloves didn't fit OJ's hands. And so the prosecution believes what I believe, that after being soaked in blood from the victims, the gloves shrank. So they bring in the glove maker, the vice president of the glove maker, on September 12, 1995, and he says the gloves have shrank from their original size. Quote unquote, "The gloves in the original condition would easily go onto the hand of someone of Mr. Simpson's size," is what the vice president says. So they produce a new pair of gloves, the same type, which fit OJ once he tried them on. So once the trial is over, Johnny Cochran revealed that Bailey had goaded Darden into asking OJ to try on the gloves. And that Robert Shapiro, remember him, had told OJ in advance to give them an appearance that they did not fit. So after the trial, it is admitted that he was told to make it appear like they did not fit. So that points to the fact that he could, in fact, be acting when he tried on the gloves. There's also the fact that he had latex gloves on underneath. They were soaked in victim's blood, which would shrink leather, because leather shrinks when you get sweat. I don't know if you've ever seen that episode of Friends where Ross has on the leather pants and he's trying to get them back on, but he sweats, so they shrunk and he has to use baby powder and they won't go back on. And then his date finds him in the bathroom with baby powder and his leather pants down. Okay. So September 8th, 2012, so recently, so many years after this trial, about 20 years after the trial, Darden accused Johnny Cochran of tampering with the gloves before the trial. OJ's defense team, the Dream Team, refuted the claim, quote unquote, The defense doesn't get access to evidence except under controlled circumstances. Okay, so let's get into the closing arguments. So Darden says that the police officers didn't want to frame OJ. Why would they? Why would the LAPD be against OJ? Why didn't they do anything when they went to his house on 8 different domestic violence calls if they hated OJ and wanted to frame him? They never arrested him. They only did on January 1989 when those disturbing photos of Nicole Brown Simpson's face were shown. And she had bruises everywhere. She had choke marks on her neck. So, yeah. So that was part of, like, if they're trying to attack OJ personally or frame him for crimes, they had plenty of opportunities to arrest him where they didn't. Also, OJ wasn't arrested for 5 days, and 5 days after the murders, so the prosecution points this out. During their closing arguments, Cochran and Scheck objected 71 times in order to lessen their effect on the jury. 69 of these were overruled, but he never told Cochran and Scheck to stop or threatened them with contempt of court because they're obviously acting out of turn. They know that's crazy to object 71 times in a closing argument and have 69 of them be overruled. They're clearly just doing it. So Johnny Cochran says he was unable to refute any of the prosecution's claims in his summation. He dedicated his entire closing argument to tarnishing the LAPD, bringing up all the racism, bringing up their terrible past, how Furman said the N-word, Lang and Vinatter were all racist. He brought up how many times Furman said the N-word again. Sorry, that was my dogs. Told you might hear them. Anyways, so he attacks the LAPD, brings up how many times Furman said the N-word and boasted of beating other black people to police officers. Cochran even refers to Furman as Adolf Hitler, saying he's a genocidal racist, a perjurer, and America's worst nightmare, and the personification of evil. Seems a little intense for him, but whatever. And claimed without any evidence that the glove was planted to frame O.J. Simpson, and it was because he hated interracial couples. Furman, that is, hated interracial couples, so he planted it. He also presented a piece of paper to the jury with the title of Vinatter's Big Lies. And there was no evidence of this, but he claimed that he returned to the crime scene with the blood and planted it there and had given it to Dennis Fung. And Dennis Fung did all the contamination and planted blood evidence. And that Lang and Vinatter were two devils of deception. And that they implored the jurors to, quote unquote, acquit Simpson and send the police a message, which at the time, many people of color did want to send the LAPD the message. They still do. Following this, Cochran got many death threats. He had to hire a bodyguard. And Fred Goldman, who is Ron Goldman's dad and Jewish, was really upset that he compared Furman to Hitler, saying that is crazy. And Johnny Cochran was, quote unquote, the worst kind of racist ever and a sick man. He was a black supremacist and an anti-Semite. And Robert Shapiro, who is Jewish, expressed that he was offended also by Johnny Cochran comparing Furman to Adolf Hitler and the Holocaust and saying that comparison wouldn't even be possible. And remember, Shapiro was part of the defense team, the dream team. So even he's disgusted by this. Vinatter becomes so infuriated with Johnny Cochran's claims that he almost wanted to strangle him in the courtroom. So the verdicts. Fears grew because there were race riots, and there were still riots in 1992, and they all happened in Los Angeles, so LAPD. And people were scared they were going to happen again if OJ was convicted of the murders, because obviously Furman used the N-word a bunch of times, and it looked like the defense made it look like it was all about race when it wasn't. But at the time, that argument carried a lot of weight. So the LAPD were put on 12-hour shifts. They arranged for more than 100 officers to surround the courthouse on the day the verdict was announced. At the time, the president was Bill Clinton, and he was given a briefing on security measures if a nationwide riot did occur. That's how into this trial people were. They were scared of a national riot if he got convicted. At 10:07 on October 3rd, 1995, O.J. Simpson is acquitted on both counts of murders. He's definitely guilty, like 100% guilty, but he's acquitted. By 3 p.m. on October 2nd, after 4 hours of deliberation, this was announced. After the verdict was read, juror number 9 gave Simpson a Black Power raised fist salute. You know what that looks like. The Black Panther Party backed all this. It was big. It was huge. An estimated 100 people watched worldwide or listened to the verdict's announcement. I remember my mom listening to this. Long-distance telephone calls declined by 58%, and the New York Stock Exchange decreased by 41%. Water usage, as people majorly decreased because they didn't want you to be in the bathroom when the verdict came. The verdict cost an estimated $480 in lost productivity. That's crazy. That's how into this our nation was. Across the nation, it caused everybody stopped working, so it caused $480 million in loss that day. So the U.S. Supreme Court got a message on the verdict, and the justices quietly passed the note to each other while listening to the attorney's presentation. Press conferences were canceled, and quote-unquote, "Not only would you not want to be here, I don't want to be here either," quote unquote. So, yeah. So, the verdict was met to a very big mix. It caused a huge racial divide because the N-word was used so many times. And once there was proof of that, everybody wanted to show the LAPD. And I understand it's not okay to frame and be terrible to Black people throughout the United States. And it's true. Unfortunately, I don't think that was the case with this trial. So I think that OJ did it and he got away with murder. But there's so many not guilty Black people convicted that it's so unfair. It was pretty much because he had the money to hire the best team money could buy. So I don't think that race had anything to do with it. I think OJ was guilty. I do think that the police can be racist, are racist, do have prejudice towards people of color. Don't get me wrong. But yeah, I disagree with the verdict. Okay, so next week we will be diving into the reaction from America and my theories about what actually happened that night. So please join us again then. If you enjoy this podcast, like and share with your friends. give us a rating, and you can add us on Twitter at Rose420. So it's R0SE420. The number's 420. Or on Instagram at Weed, Wine, and True. Or just look up Weed, Wine, and True Crime on either, and we should come up. Thank you for listening. I hope to hear from you guys. I'm also wondering, do we want to do a series on a cult? Because cults are interesting to me. So hit me up on social media. I hope everybody has a great day. I will see you soon to get into the final conclusion of the O.J. Simpson trial.